Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron. And Tony the Tornado is out this week. I'm going to have Psychic Tom Padgett tuning in any minute. We got a lot of stuff to talk about this week. We got Jose Aldo pulling out of the big UFC fight with Conor McGregor. We got lots of stuff going on with the Reebok, new Reebok outfits coming out for the UFC. A little bit of a controversial ending to a major title match last week with Timothy Bradley. So, plenty to discuss. I'm sure Tom is waiting to chime in. We also have a special guest tonight, Sean Jordan, who beat up Derek Lewis not too long ago on a UFC Fight Night event, Henderson versus Boach. So we've got a big show tonight. Just to start out, someone else is suing Premier Boxing Champions, Bob Arum, has come out now and sued them. That's another little tidbit of the story. Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear what's going on, man.
Is this Sean?
Yes, sir.
Oh. I thought it was going to be 9:15, but that's cool.
Oh, I can call back. You want me to call back?
No, that's fine. We're just still waiting a little bit on our co-host. He should be popping in any minute.
Oh, okay.
But I can do it solo while we're waiting for him. One of the big things, of course, everybody's been talking about is your kicking ability after that last fight. Tell us, how'd you learn to kick like that?
In MMA, we have to train everything. I've been working a lot with Roger Crowe, who's the kickboxing coach at American Top Team. Since I started doing this stuff, I've done and I've tried a lot of new stuff. A big part of that is Coach Winklejohn at Jackson's, too. He's the same. He likes to pull, unorthodox stuff and try to use athletic ability with it. So kind of been trying to just find use it in a fight.
Awesome. Yeah, I couldn't believe you could get that that leg that far off the ground, that kind of power to knock a guy down. I'm trying it myself, and I'm about 205 right now. And I'm doing amateur training, trying to get an amateur fight before I get too old for it. And I've done boxing, but, the kicking comes a little harder. You got to really... do a lot of stretching to be able to kick like you can with that stuff.
Absolutely, yeah, you're right. It's a lot of stretching. Luckily, I'm pretty limber.
But nice work, for sure. What was that like to get that kind of knockout on live TV on a big event like that?
What was that? How's it feel?
Yeah, what was that like to get that knockout?
It was great. Anytime you go in a fight, in the UFC and do it in that kind of fashion, it's always great. It's a great feeling. It's hard to explain, I guess. It's a lot of excitement, and the fact that the fight's over and you won, it's just huge,
Right. And how'd you first get into fighting?
It's funny. I played football for LSU. I bounced around a little bit with some other teams, and then I kind of just need a hobby, and I sucked at golf. So I started competing at this, and I liked it, and it kind of turned into a career. So,
right. And what's your plans for this division here in the UFC?
If you're fighting your competitor, you want to be the best. That's kind of I think any athlete should answer that. But yeah, I'm looking forward to finding someone, hopefully top 15, top 10, my next fight.
Awesome. And You've been in the UFC for a little while. I think I looked earlier. It was like 5 of 7 of your fights in the UFC. You've been able to win. What's that been like having that success at that level?
It's great. I mean, like I said, you kind of in this sport. I think if you you kind of figure out if you like it or not, you're good at it or not. And if you're not that good at it, you don't stick around too long. every fight, it doesn't matter if you win or lose, you get beat up. So, winning fights is huge. It keeps you going. It keeps you motivated to keep competing.
And you get bonuses, right?
Absolutely. That's another big one that motivates you to stand up there and bang and knock people out.
I can imagine. Now, what's your ultimate goal with everything?
Like I said, I'm gonna read this. I want to just keep going, moving up. I'm an athlete. I'm a competitor. I want to be the best. So it takes time, and I know there's a lot of really, really great athletes in the top 15 of my weight division. I'm excited though. I'm excited to keep going and competing.
All right. Well, if you want your future to be told, we have Psychic Tom on the line.
What was that?
I'm one of the co-hosts, Sean, and first off, I'd just like to say to you, congratulations on the trajectory of your career, how good it's been going for you. I mean, it just seems like everything is coming together for you great, and I know you've been working terribly hard on it because, I mean, this stuff looks easy, it's anything but. And I really think you represent the evolution of the sport. Because I think in the early days, we wouldn't have seen a guy with your style and size be able to do what you did in that last fight. And congratulations. I'm amazed.
Well, thank you. I really, really appreciate that. It means a lot.
And you know, what I wanted to ask you about this, Sean, is, when Cain Velasquez beat Brock Lesnar, there was a great article in ESPN.com, ESPN, the magazine, and they were talking about how the sport's evolved so much. And, everyone's so good at, the stand-up game. I mean, in the old days, and I'm sure you've studied the history of everything. And, back in the early days, everything was pretty much one-dimensional. But now, more and more, we've seen the wrestlers come in, and then the grapplers had to learn striking. And now everyone's so good at the basics and everyone's conditioned, and each generation gets better. And the question was back then, has the sport come to an evolutionary dead end? Everybody's so good. And myself and some friends were talking about it. And, now we've got massotherapists and nutritionists and strength and conditioning coaches. And I said that I see two directions we'll go in. One of them will be more of like sports psychology and guys working on that kind of stuff. And the other one would be a little return to some traditional martial arts techniques. Okay. Now, my question to you, really brought that into focus because that kick that you threw in your last fight was something I seen from my old taekwondo teacher back in the 1960s, I mean, I'm dating myself, but that was not a traditional Muay Thai kick. So, first off, I just like to ask you where you think I'm off base here in my analysis of the evolution of the sport. If you think I'm wrong, let me know. And second, is there anything you do in particular to get your mind ready for battle? Or do you just rely on your training and your experience and conditioning?
Yeah, I think you're right with as far as the evolution of the sport. And it is. It's coming, like you said, it's coming to where people are so good at everything nowadays that it is getting tougher and tougher. But at the end of the day, it's still just a fist fight. Mm-hmm. There's so many facets to it and so many different ways or techniques. But, you have to get in there and fight. You can be the best in the world, especially at my weight class. Be the best in the world, be talented, and just be a world beater. And then get in there at the big board and get caught.
Right.
And like you said, I think it's important for guys to, like you said, use some more traditional or martial arts. You got to use different facets. You got to use different things that not everyone else is using. And you got to surprise people with stuff because if you don't, you stay the same and you don't change, you're going to get left behind. It's kind of And then you touch base on some of the nutrition and stuff like that too.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. It helps because you got bigger guys fighting small weight classes now. So, you know, it is evolving quickly.
Yeah, and I think that you have to stay on top of things because the sport, the essence of this ESPN, the magazine article, was that the sport is evolving so fast that in the early days, each generation was like a couple years, and now it seems like, you know, every couple months there's some new stuff going on. And I think that you just have to stay one step ahead. And I can just tell from watching you, you're really evolving quick. I mean, that kick came out of nowhere. And the thing is, especially at the division you fight in, it's awful hard to prepare for that. You don't see too many guys your size that can kick that effectively. I mean, it's just and you know, fighting is so mental. And I'm sure you know, you're well aware of that, especially at the level you're at, that this game has – you know, a gigantic mental component to it. And, you know, it's different. I like to talk to fighters about that because some just say they just train and they're in good shape and they're confident. Others meditate and do creative visualization and stuff. But is there any way do you have a preference or how do you handle the mental part of it?
Earlier in my career, I kind of, like when my first few fights in the UFC, the bigger fights, I had a lot of nerves. I think it's healthy. If you're getting in a cage, you're going to fight another man. You both train, mm-hmm. you're both in shape, you're both ready to fight. So I think the nerves are good. But for me mentally, this last fight, I was more comfortable in this last fight than I've been in any of my fights so far. I think time, you know, cage time, training, also, you know, training with good guys also helps really prepare you mentally. But I've competed my whole life, too, so it's a little easier for me to get in there and just compete. It's not personal to me.
Exactly.
And,
Whenever it is
personal, I try to get all that out before I get to the fight. Because it's not. I mean, it's business, and it's like human chess. If I'm all emotional, I'm just going to be swinging.
Well, yeah, and you got to look at it this way. If you didn't have an opponent, you couldn't demonstrate your skills. I mean, your opponent, I think Vitor Belfort summed it up good. He said, "My opponent is my opponent, not my enemy."
Absolutely.
And I heard that, and I said, you know, wow, because, you know, the sportsmanship in this sport is what, that's the spirit of all sports, especially martial arts, and that's what's always drawn me to it. I mean, here's a couple guys going at it. You both want to win, but afterwards you shake hands and, hey, good fight, man. We'll do it again. You know, it's just, there's something special about that, I think. Really something
Absolutely.
Special.
Absolutely. I mean, you get in there and you bleed with another man. You guys are fighting, and then win or lose, you come out of that and you have to respect him. I mean, he got in the cage with you.
Mm-hmm.
And without him, you don't have a job.
Yeah, exactly. And in my amateur days many years ago, if I got beat up, that tells me what I need to work on. I kind of always looked at it like that. I never had a grudge about it. I mean, hey, I don't expect anyone to roll over, and, you know, especially in the business you're in now at the level you're at. But, I'm telling you, I think you really put the entire heavyweight division on notice with that last fight. And I think anyone that's in your radar screen in your future is a complete idiot if they don't take everything into consideration with you. So,
well,
I mean,
I appreciate
that's just,
that.
you just keep doing, you know, it seems like it's coming together great for you. And I noticed, too, you did seem very relaxed in there. And that seems to be so important that if you don't have that calm, you burn your cardio up so quick. And if that happens, it's over. I mean, if the car's out of gas, you ain't going nowhere.
Absolutely. I tell that to a lot of guys that are, you know, kind of up and coming and doing stuff. Maintain your composure. Be poised. It helps you. You fight cleaner, and it helps you, you know, like you said, you don't gas out. You can't control yourself. Emotionally, you can gas out. Mentally, way faster than your body gasses out. And that ruin you for a fight.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, at any weight division, everybody hits hard. I mean, everybody's good in UFC. That's why they're there. But in your weight division, especially, you know, like some of these idiots will start booing if they don't have Rock'em Sock'em Robots. But what they don't seem to realize, one mistake, and you're looking up at the lights wondering what the hell happened. I mean, you've got to fight smart.
It's always funny, too, when they talk about heavyweights. Like, oh, he doesn't have a chin. No, man, you're getting hit by another 270-pound man. I mean, you're getting hit. It's just, that's what happens.
Well, I mean, anyone that would be dumb enough to say that. I mean, look, anything can, one punch can end a career.
Yeah.
I mean, and I've seen it happen, especially in boxing sometimes. You know, a guy will get hit once and it can cause so much damage. I mean, you've got to think defense, but you've got to be entertaining. It's a fine line. And that's why, it's just so tough now that I just wish that a lot of our fans could be a little more educated. I mean, they have a right to express their opinion and want some entertainment, but come on, guys, be realistic about it. I mean, in football, you can't have a touchdown every pass you throw, you know.
And, that's the thing about fans and social media nowadays. Everyone has an opinion. But, all these guys are in there, we're fighting. We're trying to compete. We want to win, too. We don't want to – we're not trying to be boring.
Sure. No, exactly. And also, I noticed you have a football background. And do you think that's – that kind of mental toughness and takedown ability from football's helped you a bit?
Absolutely. I do think so. I played for LSU and stuff, and our strength coach is Tommy Moffitt, who is still there now. Real good friend of mine. I talk to him still. I respect him. He really, really just instilled him and beat mental toughness into us when we played there. They'd run us and say, we do stuff that wasn't really to get you in shape. It was just to see how tough you were. So, I mean, I think that really does kind of carry to this fight stuff. A lot of my I win fights, but, I mean, I still get beat up.
Sure.
I just don't stop.
Sure. Well, so much is conditioning. As the great Vince Lombardi said, fatigue makes cowards out of all of us.
Absolutely.
And I think you probably learned a lot of lessons on the football field that you could carry over in into the cage.
Yes, sir.
Is there anybody out there you really want to fight next or sometime soon?
I'm at home right now. I just came to spend some time with my daughter. But now I want to fight. I just want to fight some of the top tens. Some ranked above me. It's time to start. Chipping back up in the ranking. I've had a few shots of guys that top 12 ranking guys, and I've lost. I beat my Russo when he was at number 10 or something. But it's time to get me. Start working my way back up there, and get me up there.
Right. Awesome.
Yeah, that's the way you do it. One fight at a time. Just one fight at a time.
Yes, sir.
and Sean, I think there's an old cliche that the most important fight, the only fight, is your next one. Okay.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's tempting to have long-term goals, but if you don't win the next fight, you're set back so much. So it's. But I really like your mindset, and that's so important.
Appreciate it.
Now, do you have a favorite strike or punch that you like to throw a lot? Obviously, I don't think you throw that one a whole hell of a lot. Like a surprise.
I like uppercuts. I like my front uppercut and overhand. I like those.
Awesome.
I'm quick, so I get inside and I can do a lot of damage inside fast, and I get out.
No.
So.
I'm sure you noticed being in the division, Andre Arlovsky's last fight. One thing
I trained Andre and then Travis both, actually.
Awesome. One thing I noticed about that fight in particular was something that I've been trying to get into my training more, and it's the regular back fist. I think it's been a forgotten thing in MMA. Everybody's spinning back fist now, but the regular back fist, this is just as effective if you land it correctly, and he was landing them.
As big as guys are, I mean, you can land anything that hits, lands solid, it's effective. And even the smaller guys, they're so fast and they're kind of long, it's kind of like a little whip. So it doesn't really matter what they do, it still hurts.
Yeah, I love the story last week of the guy from Bellator, right before he got knocked out, he said to the guy, "You're a pussy." Hit him with a Superman punch. I don't even see those anymore, really. Used a lot.
That's funny.
Knocked him out with it. Go Schilling. That was a guy who was a kickboxer, too.
That's funny.
What's been your greatest moment in the sport so far?
all of them, man. This last one's kind of be it's the last fight I just fought. The one I learned the most of one was probably that Chikongo fight, and you know, I just learned from that fight, and I lost that fight, but I think that was kind of the time where, you know, it changed my mindset and kind of made me decide I needed to change what I was doing a little bit.
Yeah, I just don't like that guy, the way he fights. It's, to me, I look at that guy and I say, he should be a striker. And he just sits there and runs the whole time.
He's also older now, you know, can't take all that damage.
Yeah.
You know, Sean, no, I really think that was a good approach you had because, you know, a setback, I think in life, you learn more from your setbacks than you do from your victories sometimes. And I think that can make you stronger. And you seem to just look at it the right way, saying, okay, I'm not going to blame anyone for this. I mean, it was a close fight. It was competitive, but he must have been hard to take down. My God, I mean, I know you were putting a lot of pressure on him.
I took that fight on 3 weeks' notice, too.
Mm-hmm.
I froze up. I wasn't really trying to take him down.
Oh, okay.
I froze up. I don't know how else to put it. I just froze up, and I couldn't get me. My mind was telling me to do something. I just couldn't get going.
Wow. Yeah, because I noticed you spent a lot of time in the clinch with him. And I was just—it shows you sometimes it's hard to know what's going on. I'm so glad I could talk to you about that because, you know, it looked like you were really—he was stuffing your takedowns, but maybe it was more on you. But hey, you didn't blame anyone for it and say, "All right, there's a couple things I need to work on and come back even better and stronger."
That was my first big fight too.
Sure,
I think we were the co-main event of that card. It was my first huge fight, and we were in Canada. Yeah, I got the call, and I was like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll fight. It's Chikongo, guy that, sure, now it's fine and it's different, but at that point, that was a guy that watched fight before I even started fighting.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
When I got in there, I kind of just froze up. I just froze up.
You see, as we were saying about the mental aspect of the game, that's gigantic because I get the feeling in a rematch, not saying for sure you'd win, but I think you'd be approaching it very different mentally the next time. There is a next time, you know. And,
absolutely.
And it's so tough taking a fight on 3 weeks' notice. I put myself in your shoes. You don't want to say no, but it's so hard to stay in fight shape. You know, Rich Franklin had a great statement. He said that being in shape is one thing, but being in fight shape is a whole separate animal. And it's just so hard to stay at that peak all the time. You'd burn your body out. So
especially for bigger guys.
Yeah, exactly.
We're gonna fight you about time. We're gonna be hurt constantly.
Yeah. Now, are you doing much powerlifting, Sean? Like deadlifts and squats and all that stuff, or?
For this last fight, I did. I'm going back to some of that style stuff again. More power, like cleans, power cleans and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just athletically, and my body responds to that better. I like to do all the circuits and stuff, but I kind of end up wearing myself out when I do all that stuff by the end of camp. But if I do a couple of weeks with some heavier basic lifts and some power, you know, power movements, and then work it down to, you know, cardio, you know, conditioning, you know, strength conditioning
right.
and stuff, I find that my body's kind of works better that way right now. I got to change things. I can't keep doing the same way all the time.
Oh, tell me about it. But I think in your case, there's very few guys in that division that are going to outpower you. So you got to keep your strength, but you got to work that cardio and the reflexes. I mean, it's a full-time situation. I mean, even being flexible and working on balance and stuff. I mean, and then doing all the boxing, the Muay Thai, the wrestling, the BJJ. I mean, it's, you know, full-time job.
No, it really is. And it's great. It's fun to do. But, I mean, during training camp, there's days you don't want to do it. I mean, you're beat up, you're tired, you're hurt, you're hungry.
Sure.
But, I mean, you know, that also helps with the mental toughness part, you know, getting to fights. Once you're there, it's like, well, look, man, I just spent this last 10 weeks or 8 weeks trying to focus on just you, and you took all this time from me, and now it's time to compete.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think most people realize just how hard it is in training. Sometimes some fighters look at the fight as a reward that, hey, at least the training's over with now. You know, now I can go in and just fight. But just the dietary sacrifices and the making sure you're getting enough rest. And I mean, it's just, you just, when you leave the gym, you can't put it behind you. I mean, you can't go out and party. I mean, none of that stuff. I mean, it's a lot of sacrifice, but it sure pays off when you win.
Absolutely. I mean, it feels good when you win. It makes it worth it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Hey, many times over.
I don't, you know, I'm competitive, and I do not like to lose at anything. But with this sport, it's so much, it hits so much harder. You know, you, like I said, you put so much time into it, and that's time. You know, I train in Florida. My daughter lives in Louisiana. You know, that's 8 or 9 weeks I'm away from her, and I can't get that back. So when I lose, it really, really hurts my feelings.
Now, who are you training with now, Sean, in Florida? What team are you with?
Down at American Top Team.
Oh, okay. No, that's interesting. Okay. And it's a good, good
group of guys and good coaches out there, you know. There's constantly, you know, 4 or 5, 6 heavyweights there, so I have training partners.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You ever get any coaching from Mike Brown down there?
What was that?
You ever get any coaching from Mike Brown down there?
Oh, Mike's the best. I love Mike. Yeah, all the time. He comes and he does all the wrestling classes with us and stuff. But yeah, no, Mike's one of the nicest guys I've ever met. And he likes to come critique us because the big guys are always rolling and doing stuff, and we don't do stuff exactly the smaller guys do. So he comes over and gives us a little talk. But I have Steve Mocco there, who is legitimately one of the best heavyweight wrestlers from America ever. So.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember watching him a couple years ago on ESPN. Yeah, and I just knew he'd go places. And, you know, you got a lot of history there with Conan. I remember him from the Extreme Fighting days. Boy, that's
Conan.
That's going back. Yeah, so you talk about the history of the sport. I remember he was, and you know, I don't know if you've ever seen any of those old Extreme Fighting. They didn't last long.
I did.
But, he was a classic back then. And then I have another one of our former guests, Dean Thomas.
Dean
Thomas.
So
yeah.
There's a lot of good guys out there that are just real knowledgeable. I've been lucky. Outside that, I trained with, when I first started out here, I started with Rich Clemente, who's
mm-hmm.
another, you know, veteran of the sport, and been around and trained and fought everybody. So.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I believe in the history of things. And just because those guys hadn't evolved as much, I have nothing but respect for those old school guys in the early days. I mean, can you imagine the stones that took going in there with two rules that nobody remembered sometimes? You know, there's no time limits. There's no weight limits. I mean, wow, this is a spectacle. I mean, guys were just incredible, and they were the pioneers. And I think that it's kind of sad that a lot of these young guys, you know, when I'll talk about someone like a Steve Jenham or something, and they look at, oh, well, what are you talking about? Well, come on, man. The sport's only 20 years old. You don't know that? And they look at me like, what are you talking about, you know?
Most kids are too stuck on social media and stuff nowadays to actually know anything about anything.
Yeah, and that's sad because there's such a rich history. And when you see the evolution of this stuff, how – you know, we didn't know, like back in the 70s and 80s, you know, when I started back in the 60s, we figured, well, how would karate do against boxing, or how would kung fu stack up against wrestling, and all these questions, and nobody could come to any definitive answers. And then we found out after UFC 1, if you don't know how to fight on the ground, you don't know how to fight, period. And that just revolutionized everything. And then the wrestlers came on. And I think for years they were just the Rodney Dangerfield of martial arts. Nobody respected him. But wrestling's not glamorous, but it's very effective. And we just kept seeing those changes, and the pioneers led us to where we're at now.
I agree. I mean, and watching some of those older guys and stuff, you know, that watching them and how, like you said, it was so one-dimensional back then. It's eye-opening for a lot of kids nowadays, or guys like me.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing this stuff, it's like, wow, man, it's evolved so fast, and it's a real sport now, you know.
Yeah, and by 95, you know, we had Marco Huas. He was one of the first hybrid fighters, and Don Fry, and even Mark Coleman was realizing he had, because Coleman was such a monster at wrestling. My God,
mm-hmm.
when Mark Coleman came along, he was the George Foreman of the Mike Tyson of those early days. But he may have had a good comment, too. He said, you know, you don't know. He said, there's so many ways to get your ass kicked in this sport, but there's so many ways to improve that you don't know who's improved. A guy could be a complete different fighter in a couple of years. So,
no, absolutely.
Yeah. Andre Hlovsky is a perfect example of that.
Well, Andre was always, yeah, he was always well-rounded, too. Back in, I remember he used to win fights with leg locks. Yeah.
Guy, Eastern European guy, just tough. And he's hard to get to, like, you know, I like him a lot. I respect him. I think, you know, those guys are legends to me. I'm glad that he came back and he's had such a strong, you know, comeback. So.
Yeah, he's definitely reinvented himself a little bit down there at Jackson. Actually, it was kind of interesting watching the documentary Proving Grounds and hearing that John Jones is actually jealous of Andre because he not only spends a lot of time with Greg Jackson at the gym, but when they go out to party and stuff, he doesn't ever want to go anywhere with John Jones. He just wants to go places with Andre.
I've seen how Andre dresses. He's got that gangster look about him. You know, gets that hat on. He just looks like Joe Cool, you know.
No, man, they're
good story.
I mean, I trained all of them over at Jackson's for my first two years of fighting. Great guys, a great group of guys, you know. John's a man. He's funny.
Now, what do you love most about the sport on mixed martial arts?
I think it's the thing I love and hate the most about it. it is. It's all on me. It's kind of a – it's not – you compete by yourself in the cage. So you get the blame. You're the one that messes up. You're the one that loses. I think that's good and bad. For me, it's my favorite and part of my least favorite. Because, you know, playing football was great, but there's 10 other guys on the field at one time that's going to help me out. Now, sure, I have coaches and stuff that are out there in the ring, but I'm fighting. Like, I'm in there by myself. You can yell all you want. I'm still in there trying to, you know, dodge punches.
Right, exactly. Someone summed it up. They said fighting is somewhat of a team sport, but a lot less of a team sport than any other sport because the bottom line is you're in there by yourself. I mean, nobody does it on their own. You can't prepare on your own. But it's the most individual. It's like being at the foul line in basketball all the time, you know. You're out there, and you don't even have a uniform like you did in football. Don't even have any pads on, you know.
I tell you, man, you know, I'm kind of a outwardly shy guy, you know, around a lot of people. And I don't really like taking my shirt and stuff off in a fight, but I have to.
For sure.
But it's funny. It's just funny. I was like, okay, the football was great. I had a helmet on. No, don't get me.
Right.
Yeah,
that kick that you landed in this last fight made a lot of fat guys proud around the world.
Oh, I know. I got going for the fat guys.
Yeah, right. And it wouldn't be complete without congratulating you on the backflip. The backflip. I mean, if the kick wasn't enough. And, you know, me and a couple of guys were watching, and they're just sitting there with their mouth open saying, God, I can't even do that. You know, I only weigh 160 pounds. And I said, well, that's an inspiration, okay? I said, you use this as Jordan's inspiration.
By Nelson, too. Yeah, that's a lot better finishing move, too. He just rubs his belly and jumps on the cage. Anyway, Sean, anybody you want to give a shout-out to or any place people can find you online you want to let people know about?
Yeah, look me up at Savage Sean on Twitter and Instagram, and Sean the Savage Jordan on Facebook.
Awesome. It's definitely going to be interesting to see where you go from here. We'll have our eye on you for sure.
And Sean, just don't forget us now when you're really, you know, when you're getting that belt wrapped around your waist. Don't forget us, okay? Promise you'll come back.
I will. Amanda, make sure I get back.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, guys, man. You guys have a good night.
Best of
you
luck,
too.
Sir.
Thank you, man. Bye-bye.
Just enjoy your time off with the family. Have a good night. So there we have it. That's Sean Jordan, tough guy, It's a big kick.
Oh, smart, and, athletic. I mean, that guy, he's got a lot of stuff going for him, and I meant what I told him, that any heavyweight that looks beyond him is playing Russian roulette, in my opinion.
Right. Exactly. Well, we got way too much to talk about and way too little time this week. I don't know if we can go into this much overtime.
Yeah, what happened? What happened to us earlier there?
I had to do a wood delivery, and I got back a little late, so.
Oh, okay.
So,
well, the one news item I wanted to mention before we get to anything else, Don Fry wants into Bellator, and he wants to fight Chimo. How about that?
Chimo. Leopold?
Kimbo. Kimbo. Yeah, he said that. He said, it's a funny interview. You can find it on the Underground. He said, Shamrock's never been the same since I whooped him. Right? He said, and he said he feels he'd get rid of Kimbo very quick. So we'll see what happens. I mean, if they let Shamrock in there, I mean, hey, tell me you wouldn't be watching that.
Yeah, but it's not going to develop Kimbo into anything, you know. It's just going to be the same old dude. You can't deal with takedowns. I don't know. John Fry might be able to beat him. That's a funny thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's still in shape. Who knows? But.
Yeah, Fry was. We were talking about the evolution of things, and Fry sped the evolution up quite a bit. When he first came around to UFC 8, he had a good wrestling background, a good judo background, and he was a former pro boxer. And he really put things together. And again, that sounds so blah and cliche-ish now, but it wasn't then.
Right. Well, we were talking a little bit earlier with Sean about Czech Congo. He had a pretty lackluster win for Alexander Volkov over the weekend there in Bellator, 139. That was kind of an interesting card. Not the best I've seen in a while, but...
Yeah, well, he did what he had to do. He got the W. I don't think he's really got picked up a lot of fans from an excitement standpoint. But again, just as we were talking with Sean, you know, that Russian fella, I've seen him land some knockout kicks too. A lot, very powerful guy.
Right, and I don't know. It still makes me wonder what Kimbo's going to do against a guy like Czech Congo. Somebody's in shape and his age, you know, or younger. So we'll see, but
and Joe Schilling, what the heck happened there, Joe Schilling?
Called him a pussy. He called Hisaki Kato a pussy. That's what I read moments before that punch landed. So don't.
You know, it's all right to go in there confident, but. I don't know. That's a different mindset. I mean, I would just be very reluctant to say that. I mean, for one thing, you don't need them more fired up than they are, but, I mean, do you really want to call a guy that? And then afterwards, well, the guy was nothing. Well, then you just beat a nobody. I mean, you know, kind of weird psychology. I mean, I'd like people to think I just fought King Kong and beat him.
Hasn't had very good luck in MMA, you know. Well, I mean, he got Manhoff out of the picture in a pretty vicious knockout, but really hasn't had a lot of success as much as he's had in kickboxing.
Yeah.
He's also said he wants to do regular boxing, but with a chin like that, I don't know. Maybe it's time to call it quits, buddy.
You know, he just, you know, there's an old saying, some guys just look like fighters.
Yeah,
and Schilling just
let's do it.
You know, he just has that look about him that, you know, and with some guys, you know, you wouldn't necessarily be concerned about if you bumped into him in a bar, but Schilling would be the kind of guy, you know, he would definitely have your attention very, very quick if that happened, you know, very quick.
Right.
So.
And then we had the John Alexio fight, which. I don't know. You can kind of say if you were in John Alessio's position, yeah, hell yeah, you'd take the no contest over a imminent loss. But you know, it might have criticized the crowd was pissed. But it was an illegal knee, definitely. David Rickles, you know, should have known better than to throw that. And it wasn't one of those situations where the guy was putting his hand down just so the ref could call
that,
him.
That was just a sad situation for him. You know, so that, and I'm not going to blame Alessio. I mean, I don't know what the guy was feeling. Now, the fans felt shortchanged about it. But, you know, I mean, it just comes down to that, though, that I put myself in his shoes, and if you were that damaged from it, well, okay. I mean, the rules are the rules, whether we agree with them or not.
Right.
I mean, that's why we have them. So, okay, Ben. I mean, he did look pretty good.
Pat Curran looks pretty good against Emmanuel Sanchez. That was a pretty entertaining unanimous decision there.
Yeah, I was very impressed with him in that. Very, very impressed.
Saki Kato, he really put himself on the map with that fight. You know, that one punch, that big Superman punch. Did a great job.
Well, you know, he said he had a point to prove, and I understand where he's coming from there because, you know, a lot of times Japanese fighters, well, Sakuraba was amazing in the Pride days, and there were a few other ones, but... You know, this whole talk we had with Sean here kind of brings me back to, you know, thinking how invulnerable these guys were supposed to be back, you know, the karate guys and everything. And a lot of them haven't panned out that well. But I think we got the real deal with this guy. Time will tell.
Speaking of karate guys, one of them went down in flames over the weekend.
You know, my poor neighbors. You know, I mean, even last night, you know, I think my neighbors are saying, "My God, let's," you know, that was. I don't know if he's going to keep going. He was the highest paid guy on that card, Lyoto. So it's going to be hard for him to pack it in. And you know, this is his life, but. I just don't know. He's lost that magic. And I'm telling you, Rich, when he came around, he was Rich Franklin had, I think he was the first guy to beat Rich Franklin. Rich Franklin seemed to have the mojo. And Lyoto came on my radar screen when he first beat Franklin. I thought, wow, that's impressive. And he just seemed to have something. But that it factor really seems gone now. I don't know what direction he's going to go in. Maybe he's down to gatekeeper status now.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just the name recognition is there. The UFC's always tried to champion him. There was like conspiracy theories over whether, you know, the whole Rampage decision was set up because they were trying to market Machida at the time because of his karate and all the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's just kind of running his course with that technique. He cannot do anything with that technique with some people. They have the secret key to get around it.
I mean, and the thing is, it's almost like in the NFL, they seem to get these second-tier quarterbacks and figure them out pretty quick, whereas the top-tier guys, the Bradys and the Mannings, seem to evolve a little more, but it seems like they study these guys so much. That's popping into my head now, but I think it's the same thing here. That I know the way it worked with BJJ, that was pretty much, in those early UFCs, that was a lock-on victory, but the fight crowd kept studying, and pretty soon it wasn't what it was. It's still a big part of MMA, for sure. I'm a jiu-jitsu man myself, but it's not the lock-on victory, and guys study these things, and I think with Machida, that they've just got, they solved the mystery.
Right.
So... that's the way it is.
Well, we got a lot to cover, so we're going to speed through the rest of this card. Lorenz Larkin beat Santiago Ponzinibbio by TKO in the second round. Punches Antonio Carlos Jr. beat up the truck, Eddie Gordon. I guess rear naked choke submission, 4:37 mark in the third round. Thiago Santos beat up Steve Bossy by first-round head kick knockout.
Oh,
Ouch. I did see that one. I did watch that one later on, and that was vicious. I mean, I never seen a guy crumple to the ground, like, in the defensive stance almost, still, like, curling up with a punch. That was unbelievable. We had Hakran Diaz beat Levon Makashvili by split decision. Alex Oliveira beat Joe Merritt by unanimous decision. Leandro Silva beat Luis Gonzalez by unanimous decision. Tony Sims got his first-round knockout over Steve Montgomery, the 243 mark. And Serwan Kakai beat Danny Martinez by unanimous decision. The big story of the week, Jose Aldo out of his fight with Conor McGregor, and they've come up with a little bit of a sketchy title plan, too. But Jose is not very happy about this whole thing. First of all, a UFC doctor tried to say that it was actually a bruise, while everybody else was saying that it was broken. That's just part of the story that I'm kind of confused about, because, I mean, unless the UFC's doctor is being paid to come up with a specific diagnosis, how can you be a paid doctor and not be able to tell when a rib is broken? I mean, come on.
Well, and the whole thing, even from the organization standpoint, you want to see both guys as close to 100% as can be.
Right.
And, you know, this is one time I agree with Dana, because apparently Aldo was hit by a spinning heel kick. Well,
yep.
It's like Dana was saying, and, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but it's like WTF was going on there. I mean, when you got a fight coming up that quick, I mean, okay, granted, it's good that he was training against that kind of attack, because you know darn well that he was going to be seeing it from McGregor. But why not have padding on? You know, a lot of times you and me are on the same page about, you know, well, when Dana gets in there and shows us his record. But in this case, I have to agree with him on that. I mean,
that's why they have this stupid little health plan that they've got together, the drug testing plus, you know, lifestyle changes, where, you know, they're going to have seminars on proper training and shit. And maybe they should look into better sparring gear, you know.
And especially when the fight's coming up in a week and a half. I mean, I know that's old school stuff that should have been learned. I mean, I know the way that we would do it, we'd have some pretty intense sessions, just like, you know, sometimes, like if the fight was that weekend, we'd have the guys going at it, which was kind of crazy, but, you know, that was the early days. Now you think everyone would know better. But,
well,
you know, it's the way it was. I mean, and it's too bad. I mean, and I'm not saying that this won't be a good fight. You know, Mendez is only like a plus 120 dog in this fight on most of them. And I think that McGregor is like minus 160. So that's, in essence, a pretty close fight. There were a few other funny odds in there, too. John Howard's an underdog in this fight. And I was kind of scratching my head on that one, so I think that would be my underdog pick of the week.
Right.
But, yeah, that was very, very interesting, checking the odds out there.
Well, Aldo says, my decision was made in respect to the UFC and the fans that today see me as the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. I couldn't fight without being 100% physically, with a rib injury that could get worse if I got hit in the ribs. Many people told me to fight anyway because of the money I could make, but I wouldn't sell myself for any money, no matter how much. I fight for love, and I do it for my country. Money comes in second place. It's like a shadow. When you try catching it, you can't, but when you move forward, it follows you. Money ends someday, but legacy and things you do becomes part of the history, and that's what I value most. So he also said, this is the interesting part, I've been the UFC champion since April 2011. Defended my belt 7 times in 4 years and will do it for the 8th time in 2015. An average of twice a year. And I'm not even mentioning the WBC, a Zuffa-owned company like the UFC, where I became the champion in 2009 and put my belt on the line twice in less than a year. That is why I can't agree with the UFC's decision to have an interim champion in my division, citing the five opportunities that I couldn't defend my belt. If those fights had occurred, I would have done 12 title fights in 4 years in the UFC, an average of three fights a year, something that no other UFC champion did. Now, that's a really important point.
Well,
UFC rarely does three title defenses in 1 year. So that can't be the main reason why they are creating an interim title. But the UFC is a private company which I work for, so I can't complain about its decision. But I can't say I agree either. So, tell it like it is, Jose.
Okay, but the interim belt is something to hold your pants up with in one sense. I mean, he's not going to be stripped of the real one, and he will be fighting the web. But now, if Mendez wins this, boy, is that going to throw a monkey wrench into things, because has Mendez really earned a third shot against Aldo? That's the question.
Right.
I don't have an answer for it, but how do you see this unfolding? What do you think?
I think McGregor toasts Mendez because Mendez doesn't have near enough reach to get him any trouble.
Well, my theory is Mendez desperately needs to go back to his wrestling roots, which he's got away from quite a bit. And I think if he does that, we'll really see how McGregor can handle a wrestler. But I would agree with you that if Chad goes in there and tries to duke it out, he could be in for a long night, because McGregor is such a master at setting the distance. I mean, he's got that style where he uses his height, and it's a nightmare if you're smaller. So we'll see how it goes. And, Robbie Lawler is the dog in his fight. What do you think about that?
Robbie Lawler is the underdog?
We've got him here on Best Fight Odds. Five Dimes has him plus 165, and McDonald's minus 190. And BetSI has him plus 150, McDonald's minus 175. I find that pretty interesting, too. Wow, that's going to be fun.
Well, we talked, of course, a lot last week and the week before about Kimbo and Ken and all the different possibilities of who either of those guys could fight. Well, Joe Rogan, we also talked about saying that the fight was fake between the two, Shamrock and Kimbo. Well, now Shamrock has actually fired back. And said, why in the world would someone in Joe Rogan's position spout off with something like that when there's no proof? It's the speculation of his thoughts that could literally ruin someone's career. That's like me going out there and telling his wife that he cheated on her. And I don't have any proof, but someone just said something. And he also said his comments could have done irreparable damage to his legacy. And he said, you have these people's ears. You have a responsibility to make sure that whatever you say, you can back up. Not just say it because you think it. You ruin people's lives on something he has no proof. He's wrong, what he said. He could have ruined my career and my life. What's he saying? There's no proof of it. He said, I swear on everything that I love, my family, my God, that fight was not fixed. The people that are saying that are angry because they lost a bet or are just being hurtful.
Well, it's hard to refute that. The problem is Shamrock does have that bit of a legacy from his past. But I would agree with him totally on this one.
Right.
Well, it's in the rearview mirror. Now we got a whole Bellator will sign the Predator and see if Fry's got one good round left in him. But when I go making my prediction, remind me to look at the calendar. Okay, hello, this is not 1996. This is not, repeat, not 1996.
Well, what else we got here? Hector Lombard's keeping busy, even though he's suspended on a doping issue. He's going to compete in a no-gi five grappling Super League card on August 2nd from California. I don't know if these guys get paid for it, but or paid if they win or whatever the deal is, but that's kind of interesting. thing that I guess they could do legally, even though they're suspended by the NFAC. But this is a designer steroid that he got popped with, so it kind of makes sense how they can allow this. But anyway, got 41 MMA fights, won 7 by submission, and he was on a designer steroid called desoxymethyltestosterone. That's beating Josh Berkman at UFC 182. Another big story. It's not a joke, Tom. Doink the Clown is suing the WWE. Doink the Clown. Died June 28th, 2013, at the age of 57. And he's supposedly died of an overdose of painkillers, according to the medical examiner. And his family filed a lawsuit in federal court recently against WWE, and basically on behalf of his children. And the suit says basically the same thing that pro football players have said, that brain injuries cause this type of manic behavior that led to the untimely death of Doink the Clown. Traumatic brain injuries, according to this lawsuit, resulted in, quote, depression and drug abuse, which ultimately resulted in his untimely death, unquote. And this wasn't the only wrestler victimized by wrestling scripted violence, according to this suit.
Okay.
But I don't know if this is going to be successful or not. It's, you know, it's one thing to, you know, have all kinds of brain scans and time lapse photography and all that to show what it actually did to him, but you can't tell what the drug use with this guy did and what the concussions from wrestling did. It's all on top of each other.
Well, and still, though, I guess the defense would be you didn't really have to take those drugs. You could have changed locations.
Right.
You know, it does get down to the just the old Nancy Reagan defense of just say no. I mean, like an entrapment situation, but the defense against entrapment is I'm not going to do it. So, but I'm not a lawyer. That's beyond my ken. How about last night's adventure with the Black Zillions?
I did not see it, actually.
Oh, okay, well.
I did not see the fight itself. I did see the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
So I know the guy broke his hand and lost the fight.
Well, this was so frustrating to me because I'm really pretty neutral in the whole thing. But when I see someone that has every opportunity to win the fight and does not seem to know basic jiu-jitsu at the one-stripe white belt level, I mean, why in the world Jason Jackson did not take Graves back? I mean, if the punches aren't doing the job, get on his back, stretch him out, and choke him. He was there for the taking. It's very frustrating. And then afterwards, the whole scene there with, I don't know if you caught the end of it, where the Black Zillion owner was going out and calling out the referee. Did you catch that?
No.
Yeah, the referee left, and the Black Zillion owner was mad that the fight wasn't stopped. But if you've seen the whole fight, I think the referee did a good job because Graves was hurt, but the referee was right on it and Graves was defending himself, and it got to the point where it looked like Jackson's punches were starting to run out of steam a little bit, and I think he did the right. And the fact that Graves was kicked in the groin, and the fact that there was some illegal head strikes, and the fact that Jackson was grabbing the fence, and then the Black Brazilians are complaining about it. They've lost a lot of – they were kind of the crowd's favorite early on, but that's kind of shifted around now. So we got a big finale next week, one more week.
Yeah, I remember Susan Singari said, don't count them out. American Top Team, right?
Yeah. Well, and that was very good advice. I mean, they've got a world class. They've got, you know, it almost seems like American Top Team should have been the favorite going into it. When I was stacking them up, I mean, no disrespect to the Black Zillions, but look at the powerhouse of coaching there with Conan Silveira and Mike Brown and Dean Thomas and on down the line like that. I mean, that's a powerhouse of coaches.
Right.
And I
had to, but that's okay. We got another story too. Josh Koscheck left the UFC and is going to Bellator, and he had some pretty interesting comments. It's kind of like, you know, I'm not going to say anything bad, but I am going to say some stuff.
Mm-hmm. About Reebok?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, about Reebok and about having handcuffs on with the UFC.
Mm-hmm.
Says, I finally get to take my handcuffs off, and I don't have to be tied to the UFC rules, restrictions, and underground rules, he says.
Well, good. Good for him. I mean, I was never a big fan, but I'm happy to see him do that, and I'd like to see more of it. How about those shirts, those jerseys? Those $95 ones. You know, I was thinking of getting three of them for us if we get together at the Joe Frazier. Imagine.
One's to take Gibbler, Melinda.
Yeah, someone even said on the underground, if I see someone wearing one of those, they're going to get a beat down. Said even the spandex bicycle riders wouldn't be caught dead in some of that stuff. I mean, that's just $95, Rich. Is it me, or I don't know? Is that reasonable? I mean, to me, maybe I'm seeing a different world here, but $95 for that?
It's just to me how the. The whole thing is so disconnected from the fighters that they can't even spell the names correctly in some of these.
Exactly. And then this guy posted his chat. I don't know if you caught any of this. I should have saved this for you and sent it to you. But he went online, and he was searching the Reebok site, and then it came up, can I help you? So he says, hey, you know, why not give it a shot here? So he starts asking about the fighters, and this poor gal on the other end of it didn't know anything about it. Nothing. And you'd have to think that when Reebok looks at, and I'm sure they're all over social media, you know, because it's such a young crowd, and when they're seeing some of the comments on there, they got to be scratching their heads saying, maybe we got to do something a little different. I mean, it seems like the men are really, and I don't even know if Reebok's heard of the underground, but that's where they should be hanging out at and see what the hardcore guys are saying about it.
Well,
I don't give him advice.
Bellator is making moves here, and if Koscheck touches a nerve with some of this stuff that he says,
mm-hmm.
you know, this could be big. This Reebok deal, I mean, these guys don't realize what's happening, I think. And Josh actually brought some of that sentiment up.
Mm-hmm. Because, well, good for him.
They treated him. He's like, oh, well, we'll take care of you if we do what you... If you do what we say, he says,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I went along with the game like all these fighters are now. I got some good bonuses, absolutely, but some fights I thought I deserved a bigger bonus or a better bonus for stepping up on short notices. Sometimes bonus shit. I can finally just say what I want and not have any repercussions because they don't own me anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, good for him. Definitely good for him.
And he also mentioned the counteroffer. Because he would have made more money working as a bartender than re-signing with the UFC. He says, I spoke with them briefly, 2 seconds on the phone. They offered something, and I said, no thanks. I could make money being a bartender somewhere, basically. At the end of the day, it's a business. Bellator and President Scott Coker put an offer together that I couldn't resist, and we sent it over to the UFC to match, and they couldn't match it, so here I am, signed with Bellator, and I couldn't be more thrilled. He's 37 years old, and he, of course, talked about the Reebok deal. The Reebok deal had a big part to do with it, he says. This Reebok deal is not good for the fighters, and the media knows it. The fans know it, and the fighters know it. The only thing this Reebok deal is good for, in my opinion, is the UFC. I don't even know if it's going to be good for them. I saw them posting stuff today regarding the Reebok deal and showing some of the designs. I left right at the right time, that's for sure, because those designs are hideous. That Reebok deal, in my opinion, is bad. I don't think it supports the fighters, and the fighters need to stand up and say, sorry, we're out. We're going to fight our contracts out and get the hell out of this. At least be able to negotiate. My suggestion for all fighters, all these UFC fighters out there, and all fighters in general, fight your fights out, fight your contracts out. You're never going to know your market value until you fight your fights out, become a free agent.
Well, this can only be good for Bellator. Let's just hope that this will be the first time that Bellator will be able to withstand what's going to be coming at them. Because you can imagine, would you like to be a fly on the wall in UFC headquarters over these comments?
Right.
And just listening
right.
to what, listen to the cyclic, you know, they used to have a phrase in the Army, the cyclic rate of fire from a demonstrator, like 780 rounds a minute, you know. Imagine the cyclic rate of the F-word coming out of Dana, you know, per minute. How many F-bombs per minute do you think he's dropping, you know? They have to be. They can't be this tone deaf. Or I don't know, maybe they can be. Maybe right now they're just so full of themselves that it's like, well, you know, F you, if you don't like it, don't let the door hit you in the ass. We got a million guys we can sign. Okay, but what about the watered-down talent at some point?
No. They just don't have the connection with the fighter. I mean, Scott Coker, for a guy who never really had anything major to do with fighting other than being a promoter and a guy behind the scenes, you know, at least Dana White had some amateur boxing training. I don't think Scott Coker has ever had it. But he's resonating with all these fighters because he treats them like people. And even Josh Koscheck says, the guy is a guy you can work with, pick up the phone and call and have a good conversation with. A guy that isn't going to cuss you out. I think that's a reference to somebody else there. A guy that's going to treat you with respect, says Koscheck. I've always had a great relationship with him. Finally, I get an awesome boss that's going to be a fun time to work for.
Well, all I can say is being tone deaf, and we see this in politics a lot, and I'm not choosing sides. I've seen it on both sides of the aisle, where these guys get so full of themselves, they're just drunk on their own power, and they become tone deaf. And you know, the average person can scratch their head and say, can't you feel the frustration and the hostility to what you're doing? Can't you see the road you're on? But they just can't. And maybe that's what we're looking at here. So,
well, they've been lying. They've been lying for so long about this deal. Like, you know, I'm not sure if I've mentioned it yet on the show, but it's like the Affordable Care Act deal where they kept saying, oh, yeah, if you like your health plan, you can keep your health plan, right?
Right, right.
They did the same thing with the Reebok deal. If you like your sponsors, you can keep your sponsors. But no, nobody's keeping their sponsors if they can't associate with them during fight
week. I mean, to me, that's just an insult to anyone's intelligence because the rules were very clear about that, that like, a week or two before the fight and a week or two after the fight, no sponsors. And then you can start wearing their stuff in your gym or something like that. Well, come on. Duh.
Yeah, it's
I'm not the brightest guy.
I might,
you know?
Somebody would come up with that and think it would work, and that it would that fighters could be happy under that scenario.
They had to know that wasn't going to work. They had to know that. But so and the question would be then if they knew that, then it's like well, we're, like I'm picturing Dana. Hey, we're too effing big. We'll do any effing thing we want to do. You know, what else could it be, Rich? What else could it be?
Right, exactly.
We're still a monopoly.
It's like anything they do, though, you know, they just focus on the brand being bigger than the fighter. They always want that to be the case so that they will always have power. So this is something to make the brand bigger than the fighter. One more thing to uniform everybody and, you know, make this deal and make it look like a big blockbuster deal that's going to set up future deals. And it's all going to trickle down to the fighters eventually, they're saying. You know, they're trying to say that it's virtually all going to the fighters, all the revenue.
Right, but right. and eventually, well, let me ask you this. Can you go to the grocery store and say, well, eventually I'll pay you guys for my groceries for the electrical company? Well, you know, I'm kind of broke this month. I'm a little short, but eventually I'll pay you, okay?
Yeah.
I just got a property tax bill today that's ridiculous. Well, can I tell the county, eventually.
The Reebok deal is like Dana White shows up at your house for Christmas, right? And, you know, takes all the envelopes that you got from your aunts and uncles that aren't there with the cash in them, takes them all away from you, and gives you back one from Reebok.
eventually, this is going to be a lot bigger down the road. And if you don't like it, I'll just burn your effing house down. I mean, that's I don't know. I don't know where this is going to go, but it just seems like that they want to keep their top stars and keep them happy, and everyone else will just be at the end. So much for the level playing field.
Right. And I'm sure Tony's got a lot about the boxing developments this week, but there was a big controversy over an early stoppage in the Bradley fight.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting. And also another story. Bob Arum is suing Al Haymon now. I guess his True TV shit didn't work out, trying to compete with Al Haymon. So they're just clamping on to this violating federal law by acting as an illegal promoter charge.
What are the specifics? So Arum wants Haymon to disband? That's what he wants?
They want more than $100 million in damages.
He wants Haymon out of business, and the PBC thing will be over, and there will be no more boxing on free TV, and it'll be all pay per view. That's what he wants, right?
Basically, they're charging, as the lawsuit says, they're violating federal law, defying state regulators, and absorbing significant short term losses to drive legitimate operators out of the business.
Like Bob Arum.
They're doing it too cheaply, is basically what he's saying. And it's making it impossible for a guy like him to compete on True TV.
because in other words, he just wants everything off regular TV. Well, I mean, that's and you know, the sad thing, he might win. And then we'll be back to all these fighters. Like, how many, even boxing fans, have seen Triple G, have seen Sergey Kovalev? This would have been unheard of in the 60s and 70s. If these monsters came around then, and in the 80s especially, the 80s had to be, I mean, the 70s were the golden age of heavyweights. But the 80s, I think, was the golden age for boxing. There's never been a decade quite like it. I mean, you're a historian. You know what was going on. And everything, every week, sometimes CBS would compete with NBC, and I'd have to have two televisions. How ridiculous was that? And then I finally broke down and got a VCR, you know. But I mean, it was ridiculous. I had to have two different channels on. And this, the way it is now, is just unheard of. And it's tragic if it would go back to that, because they're trying. I mean, Haymon, I don't know enough about his flaws to really give a big critique on him, but I do like his idea of what how he's trying to introduce boxing to network TV again and try to stir up some interest. But as long as Arum's alive, I guess that's not going to happen. So then we'll go back to where we won't get the fights we want. Nobody will ever hear of anyone. All the fights are going to be in court. I can't even think about it. It's just sickening.
He made a big investment, and he got a lot of people to put money in. And it's actually, I've read a lot about this subject, this Premier Boxing Champions idea. And Al Haymon is kind of, I mean, I don't want to say he's a shady guy, but he likes to operate in the shade, that's for sure. He doesn't like anybody seeing his picture. You know, he doesn't like giving interviews. He's a very quiet, shady guy.
But then you look at the environment, though. We don't have too many ministers getting into boxing promotion. I mean, we don't have too many police officers, you know what I mean?
He's a very quiet guy. He's not a Don King flamboyant type. He's not out there selling himself as God's greatest thing since sliced bread, you know, God's greatest gift to boxing, whatever you want to say. He's going out there and he's getting this big investment firm to put in all this money, and now the investment firm is starting to collapse. You know, people are pulling their money out because of this investment in Premier Boxing.
Well, okay, yeah, that's I can see where it's going. So it'll be back on pay per view, so nobody will watch it. Great. Yeah, that's a great way to build the sport. You know, Aram and King have just destroyed it, and they're not going to be happy until it's just gone.
And Oscar De La Hoya is not coming back, by the way. Not coming back. Definitely done. Not coming back. He's got to spend all his time on the lawsuit, his own lawsuit against him, I guess. I don't know. But we're pretty much out of time. I don't know how to get Tony's show portion to play at this point. So I'm going to have to figure it out and then set up an entirely new show with his portion of it. And then we'll just do a blog entry saying this is tonight's show and this is a link to Tony's Tornado Report. But, yeah, there was a controversy that I did want to mention with the referee stopping that Bradley fight early. Not sure who his opponent was offhand, but referee stopped the fight with, like, 7 seconds left to go. And there was actually one site that said, you know, he robbed the other guy of a victory. But I don't know if it was such a short thing that Bradley was going to go down if he had 7 more seconds to knock him out. But that was kind of an interesting thing. I'd never seen that before where the ref being accused of calling the fight early. I didn't hear no bell. Right? And speaking of I didn't hear no bell, they just had the first clip of Creed. Actually, no, not even just a clip, a trailer for the movie Creed, where Rocky trains the son of Apollo Creed. And I'm telling you, this kid looks exactly like he could be Carl Weathers' son in real life. It's crazy the look that he has. We found the right actor. That's for sure. But I think that's all we're going to put out there tonight. I'm going to have faith that Tony covered all the boxing stuff, so we didn't have to.
Yeah, he had a good Joe Frazier story in there, too. That was I'd like to get that posted. He had a very good Joe Frazier story.
We'll get that on there. Look for that on FightNewsUnlimited.com. We're going to put some blogs up there tonight in the next hour or so. So all the new stuff will get up tonight, and we'll also post Tony's report by the end of the night before morning and a link to the show there. And Sean Jordan's interview, which was great. It was probably the quickest we've ever gone from a fight to show with anybody.
yeah, but it was just so cool to. When you mentioned we were going to have him on, yeah, that was just fabulous.
I saw him on the list. I said, "Oh man, that would be awesome!" Because I've been telling everybody about this kick. You know, all my friends and everything, anybody that's into fighting.
Yeah, it was just incredible. I mean, I have to. Meant every word I said to him. I mean, I'm just very impressed with him.
I hate to use a pun, but it sounds like he's getting a kick. People's responses.
Yeah. Pun intended.
He was really laughing every time we mentioned that. We got definitely
got quite a kick out of that fight. You know, it was interesting what he told me about the Congo fight too, because I just thought that he was really, really giving it everything. Did you see that fight with him in Congo?
I probably did, but I'm just drawing a blank. I don't really remember.
Yeah. Well, he
I hate Congo so much. That was the first thing.
It was kind of slow at the stand-up, but Congo really didn't want to go to the ground with good reason, and they spent a lot of time in the clinch, got a lot of booze, in that fight, a lot of time in the clinch. And I didn't attribute it to Sean's lack of focus or, like you said, he just wasn't all there. I attributed it more to
Congo.
pun intended here, Freudian slip, but to Congo's takedown defense. And here's, like Sean was saying, you know, he did take the fight on short notice, and he just mentally, I mean, it, and it kind of drove my point home about this, you know, I mean, I hope you and Tony just aren't getting too tired of me harping on this head stuff, but I'm telling you, it's just so important. I was describing the reason I'm into it so much is I was a victim of it back in my school days when I first started fighting. I mean, there were a couple things back then that I should have won that I didn't because I was psyched out by it. So that's why I'm so big on that. I know how important it is. So, yeah, hopefully he really put it together, and okay, we'll keep going. All right, sir, I guess next week we'll do it up.
Yeah, the mental game is really important, especially when you call your opponent a pussy, right?
yeah. I mean, there's just so much of that stuff.
You know, we get Tony on next week. I'll say, you know, Tony, if we ever fight, just make sure you don't ever call me a pussy, all right?
Well, this kind of got back to a lot of Muhammad Ali's supporters in the Frazier Wars, because at the time, his supporters kept saying what a nobody Joe Frazier was.
Right.
And finally, one of them had the IQ, the brain power, to say, look, if you keep running down Frazier, what does that mean if Ali beats him? You beat a nobody. I never could understand that psychology. You know, Duran was so contemptuous of Sugar Ray Leonard. Well, who's laughing now? But I remember before that first fight, it was classic interview with Howard Cosell. He says, do you respect Sugar Ray Leonard as a fighter? And, of course, Duran said no. And Cosell said, why? And Duran looked at him, because I don't. He says, do you actively dislike him?
Another little thing that came up with the Jose Aldo story before they found out that it was, you know, definitely the fight's going to be off. Remember Conor McGregor came out, it's just all just a false alarm. It turns out it was just period pain. And the announcer goes, hey, can you say that on TV? And the other guy goes, I just did.
Yeah, just it's funny. But, I mean, that whole psychology of putting your opponent, I mean, you can, if you don't like your opponent, I mean, there are personality conflicts, and you could say, well, no matter how much of a dick the guy may be as a person, I respect he's a dangerous fighter. I don't see what's wrong with that. I mean, hopefully it never gets that stage, but it does. You know, fighters are human beings, and naturally you're going to get some guys that rubbed you wrong. But to say, well, not only is the guy a dick as a person, but he's no good as a fighter, well, then why should you get any credit if you beat him?
Yeah.
You just beat a nobody. I mean, to me, that's the craziest psychology. I'll never understand why guys do it. I don't get it. I mean, I know maybe they're trying to get into their opponent's head, but to me, that just rouses up your opponent even more. And sometimes they may need that extra incentive to push that second plate of food
we're
away.
Find out how well that tactic works when Betch Cohea and Ronda Rousey get together.
Well, I think in that point, the skill differential is so big, it's not going to make any difference. But, you know, if it's going to be a close fight, maybe that guy's going to set his alarm clock for 15 minutes earlier, get to bed a little bit earlier, and run a little further. You don't need that.
Right.
Keep it above board. I mean, you can say what you want about the guy, but don't say you're fighting a nobody and then you lose. You know, okay, he's a nobody. What does that make you? I mean, you'd want to be on suicide watch, I think, but. Again,
hospitalized.
Just me, you know. So, all right. I guess next week we'll have our final predictions on the big UFC 189, and we'll wrap up the end of the Ultimate Fighter show. It's going to be interesting.
I've got your request in for your favorite coach, so we'll see if we can get that lined up for next week.
Yeah, that will really be interesting because that. I don't know if you're able to check out that link, but that Nat Van is really starting to catch on. And there was a great article in Men's Health years ago about that, when in 2009, when he first came on the scene, this French guy. And it tells the history of it when there was a big fire down in French Santo Domingo or some, one of those islands that the French controlled. And the soldiers were so out of shape. You know, they thought they were in shape, but they really couldn't be functional. They couldn't pull people out of homes. And like you're saying, what good does it do if you can bench press 400 pounds if you can't pull a person out of a burning home and carry them through the window? Or what good does it do if you can, you know, run a five-minute mile in your Reebok or give them a plug, you know, in your $500 Reebok Air Jordans? But if you can't run barefoot on the sand, if you've got a person that really needs medical attention. And it brought up a lot of good points in there. Very interesting way to train. Just go out and have fun. Climb up a tree, throw some rocks around. Just, you know, different stuff. Very unique training. And it's working pretty good for Carlos, so we'll have a good time.
I was just like running in Cape Cod with rocks all over the beach. You know, it's good for texture.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Better than a trail.
Exactly. Sometimes I think that our training gets too civilized, and I mean, and at heart, I think that, you know, barbells and dumbbells, traditional bodybuilding is my bread and butter, but it's good to get outside sometimes. Try something different. Do a little climbing, you know, do a little jumping, a little bit of that stuff, you know, why not? You look at how, like, they use the analogy of you watch animals play, they don't run on a treadmill. If I tried to put my dog on a treadmill, he'd look at me like, he always looks at me like I'm crazy anyways, you know, but it would be even worse. He'd say, come on, let's get the ball and go out in the backyard. You can chase me. You know, they like play, and that's, it kind of gets that childlike mindset back. So, interesting stuff.
I will check that out for sure.
Sounds like a plan.
Thanks, everybody, for stopping by. Thanks, Sean Jordan and Amanda for hooking that up. We'll definitely have somebody else next week, and go from there.
Exciting stuff, bud. Okay, over and out.
Thanks a lot.
Adios.
Good night.